AI agents are everywhere, automating tasks and making decisions at machine speed. But agents make mistakes. Just one rogue agent can do big damage before you even notice. Rubrik Agent Cloud is the only platform that helps you monitor agents, set guardrails, and rewind mistakes, so you can unleash agents, not risk. Accelerate your AI transformation at Rubrik.com. That's Rubrik.com.
Future-proof extra
with Jonathan McRae,
proudly supported by Research Ireland
on News Talk.
Listener, I can't but tell you how much I do not want to be talking about what we're about to talk about. So much so that I'm really going to try my very best to not talk about what we're going to be talking about with Professor John Laffey. He's a professor of anesthesia intensive care medicine at the School of Medicine at the University of Galway. And he's also a consultant in anesthesia and intensive care medicine at Galway University Hospitals. John, welcome to the program.
Thanks, Jonathan.
Certainly an interesting study, an interesting concept.
So we're going to talk about the work of Takanori Takebe. He's a Japanese researcher. He's in Cincinnati Children's Hospital Medical Center in Ohio and the University of Osaka in Japan. And when his dad was ill, he caught pneumonia and had to be put in a ventilator. And Takebe himself said, "This is awful." And he was very worried about his father and the lack of options for his father and felt that the ventilator wasn't enough. And so he got curious as to how else we might breathe and get oxygen into the body, which of course is crucial for survival and brain function. So before we go into what Takebe's, the rabbit hole he went down and the experiments he did, first, let's talk about lung function for about 12 minutes before we have to talk about this other thing. So how does the lung take in oxygen to the blood? Like, how does that work? Because we breathe in air, and in school you learn you breathe in air and you breathe out carbon dioxide, but that's not entirely correct, is it?
So the lung has basically it's uniquely adapted to take oxygen out of the gas that is sucked into the lung. So your diaphragm, your inspiratory muscles create a negative pressure. They pull the air in. It then mixes with the gas that's already in the lung, which is kind of expired or used gas. And then the alveoli, which there are over 100 million of them in the lung, they are basically coated with blood vessels. It's an amazingly richly perfused organ of the body. And then the barrier between the blood vessels and the lung is really, really narrow. It's thin enough that the oxygen can diffuse across from the alveolus, a little air sac, directly into the bloodstream. And the carbon dioxide diffuses in the other direction. And then when we breathe out a gas that has lower oxygen and higher carbon dioxide than standard air. And it's a hugely efficient system in a healthy person.
So I'm putting you on the spot here, John, but like, how much air do we need and how much oxygen do we get from that air to be able to do the things that we do?
Well, the bottom line is we need oxygen to metabolize, right? So we need it to take energy from food, that's aerobic metabolism. And we need about 250 mils of oxygen in our tissues per minute, the average person. And to get that, then we breathe about sort of 15 to 18 breaths per minute, it depends on your size, but you know, the average 70 kilo person would breathe about a half a liter breath. So we're talking about, you know, bringing in 6 to 8 liters of air into your lung and taking from that into the bloodstream about 250 mils of oxygen per minute.
It's quite a lot. Like, it's quite a lot of
it
oxygen,
is.
Right?
Yeah.
But so we take in a huge amount of oxygen. And is it possible to get oxygen from things that aren't air? Because we talked about this on the program a while back, that you could highly oxygenate some liquids. And if you had some sort of mechanical pressure to squeeze the lungs to expel the liquid and then drink new liquid, that it is theoretically possible to be sort of breathing liquid rather than air. Is that right?
Yes, Jonathan. So there are these very high oxygen carrying capacity liquids, and they basically have high oxygen solubility. And the oxygen carrier in the study we'll talk about later is one of these. There are a whole class of these oxygen carriers, and so you can actually fill the lung with this, and then instead of pushing air in and out of the lung, you can use a machine to push the liquid in and out of the lung. And there are two sort of concepts. One is total liquid ventilation, and there are these amazing now older pictures of live animals in this highly oxygenated liquid, and they can actually survive in there. In the human setting, what was tested was partial liquid ventilation, where you put several hundred mils of this in, and then when you push the air in behind it, the fluid took up the oxygen from the air very efficiently, and it helped with the transfer into the bloodstream.
Wow.
Now, they were shown to be safe, but they never really worked well enough to be a treatment.
Yeah. When we're in the womb, we're not breathing at all, are we? The oxygen we get comes through the umbilical cord, so we don't need to breathe in air at that time. So let's talk about Takebe's study then, because he was trying to find another organ through which to breathe, and so the obvious choice, it seems, was the anus. Can you please tell me about this study?
Yes. So we do need radical thinkers,
yeah,
right? But there's, and of course, today's charlatan is tomorrow's genius, right? That there are plenty of stories like that. I mean, I think when Edward Jenner did his smallpox experiments, everybody thought he was completely loopy, right? But, the concept here is that the gut would oxygenate, and that it would be a replacement, or it would supplement the oxygenation in the lung in people where the lung is severely dysfunctional. Think about your intensive care unit patient, somebody with severe COVID-19. So he was looking for other solutions, and the gut has certain lung-like qualities in terms of, there's a lot of it. Okay. It is well perfused. There's a lot of blood vessels around the gut. But though not as much as there is around the lung. And the question then was how you would get something in and out that would carry oxygen in and out to the lung. So his experiment was that he used this perfluorodecalin, which is one of these high oxygen solubility carriers, and that you'd use that. So you'd instill this into the gut via the rectum. That then this would help to oxygenate.
So there's a tube that goes up the arse into the gut, and essentially put this liquid. Why would you not just swallow the liquid? Why would you just drink it and it would go into the gut? Doesn't that seem like, I guess if you're compromised or something,
it would have to transit the stomach. The stomach wouldn't be as good, probably. The gut is able to take, say, nutrients out of
of course.
So the stomach kind of digests it, and the acid does its thing, and then it gets into the lower parts of the gut, and then the nutrients are taken out. So
yeah,
there is it makes more sense to put it into the anus than down the mouth. The amount of oxygen you could transfer in that way is very limited. It's the kind of thing that, a little bit of back of the envelope calculations would probably, say that this is interesting, but maybe not feasible. So
what did Takebe find? He actually got people to do this, right?
Yes.
He perfused people's rectums, mm-hmm, or anuses with this highly oxygenated liquid. What happened?
Yeah, so what he did was he screened about 90 people. They're volunteers, they're healthy people. So again, this is a phase one study, and this is, in the human setting, this is always where you start. You show that it's safe. You show that, it's tolerated okay, and there's nothing, that you hadn't expected going to happen. And so he took, 90 healthy people, 60 of them were in the trial roundabouts, and about 27 to 30 then were treated with progressively increasing doses of this perfluorodecain up to a liter and a half. This, however, was not oxygenated, right? So he was just wanted to show, could he get the fluid in there? And that's what the study did, okay? So he was able to put the fluid in there.
Now, hang on. Isn't it, I mean, surely we know it's possible, given that it is a tube from the mouth to the anus. Isn't it very obvious that you can get liquid in there, or is that actually quite a challenge when it's going in the wrong direction?
No, it's fairly obvious that you would be able to put liquid in there. So, like, I mean, colonic lavages do this all the time in health spas and stuff like this, right? They would put in significant quantities of fluid. We do endoscopies where we examine the bowel with a camera. So, you know, that's been well done. And I suppose the other point, Jonathan, is these fluids have been put into the lung already in big studies in sick people and have been shown to be safe. They didn't work terribly well,
right?
But they were safe. You could argue that we kind of knew that this could be done.
But maybe he has to do phase one before he can do phase two. And there's no point in oxygenating the liquid if we can't get the liquid in. But now he's proven you can get liquid in there. Is the plan then to you? So I in my mind, I was imagining people holding their breath and squeezing their nose and breathing through their backside. Did that happen?
No.
Oh.
No, this would have been, you know, these are healthy
people.
He
didn't even get to that.
No, he would have put it in with the tube, and he was putting in increasing doses. So he put, you know, he started off with a low dose of 200 and then did three people with that and then moved progressively up to the top dose of a liter and a half. And, you know,
that seems like a lot.
It's a reasonable amount, yes. But we do know that, you know, the capacity of the colon is you know, in multiple liters. You know, we know that. Yeah. You know, and so it's a reasonable amount. The study, you know, to give it its due, as you said, Jonathan, you do need to do a phase one. You do need to show that maybe what somebody like me would say we should know already for a regulator who will always take, you know, has to really reduce the risk. They will want to see you start at a very basic level. And this is what they've done.
Yeah.
Right.
Right.
But the question would be, you know, is the construct, like, is the concept really robust? You know, and when you think about these liquids, you know, they don't carry that much oxygen. So even the top dose that he gave, which is 1500 mils, you know, that carries about 750 mils of oxygen, which isn't bad, right? But if you think about what we said before, you need about 250 mils per minute. That's 3 minutes.
Oh, so that's like you've got a river flowing through you, essentially, for this to work. Because it's not like if someone can't breathe through their mouth or nose, you can just put a liter and a half of this stuff up someone's backside and then they can breathe for a long time. That needs to be a rotating, like a garden fountain or something.
So, I mean, I think in their defense, they would say that they didn't expect it to fully take over from the lung, right? They expected that it would maybe add 10%. But let's say we add 10%. That still gives you 30 minutes, right? You know, you then have to get that liquid out, and that's not clear how you would do that, and then reoxygenate it and put it back in. Or maybe you'd bubble gas in. I'm not clear how they would oxygenate that liquid once it's in there. Now, maybe they're taking a step-by-step approach and they're working to try and figure out how they would do that. But, you know, that amount of fluid did cause distension. So it's not a case that you can just keep, obviously, you know, putting, you know, more and more in. There's an obvious limit.
Are we likely then to see a phase two in which we see something more advanced, like some sort of device that can move this liquid? Because it has to be absorbed and moved. It's got to be a circulation system.
Yeah, I think they would have to put some kind of a circulation tube in, and then, you know, either bubble, you know, oxygen directly into the fluid or recirculate with oxygenated fluid. And that would be the next step. But that sounds quite challenging.
Yeah.
I mean, I will say in their defense, like, it's a well-designed study. It's safe. You know, Nobody was, you know, there were no
badly
expected
injured
side effects. Yeah. But, you know, it's hard to see it getting to the next stage. That's the thing.
John Laffey from the University of Galway, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you very much, Jonathan.
Future Proof Extra
with Jonathan McRae.
Proudly supported by Research Ireland
on News Talk.